I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. Members were three short of the quorum. But what we'll do is begin with the overview of the first bill on the agenda, and then as soon as we, I shouldn't say overview, but the presentation of it, and then as soon as we have a quorum, we'll approve the minutes and put the bill appropriately before us. So, Representative Keith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 20, I think, is here to be referred to taxes, if I'm correct. But basically what the bill does, it was heard in the Early Childhood Division. It creates tax credits for corporations who make contributions to scholarship-granting organizations who then make grants of scholarships to qualifying kids. It's basic ideas to try to draw in some private dollars as well as public dollars to help support what I think everybody understands is a critical piece of our educational infrastructure. That's the gist of the bill.
Okay, and members, the testimony was taken in the Early Childhood Committee, and because it does provide for a tax credit, if it's in the end favorably acted upon, that would come out of the Tax Committee targets. So,
that's correct, Mr. Chair.
And would be to simply move it at that time to the Tax Committee. But are there any questions, then, of Representative Keeson on this bill?
I understand the need of the bill to go to Education and Tax Committee. Why does the bill got to come here?
Because the Education Committee is one of the divisions of this committee.
What a mess, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swigum, on that point, you know the process that we have in place here is identical to what one of the Republican speakers set up in the mid-1980s when the Ways and Means Act was established. And the only difference is that there are more divisions today, and that was involved by Speaker Long, that you also conferred with. I think that if more members involved with the financial process, the fiscal committees.
Well, thank you for the Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman, thank you for the history lesson. I think it's a mess.
Yeah, well, you've got the same history that I have, and you operated very similarly when you were speaker, so I think we'll move ahead, Representative Swigum. Any questions on the bill?
Have it up night, Mr. Chairman?
No, I said your points are well worn.
Worn or taken?
Well, Warren.
There is a difference, Representative Swigum. Okay, if there are, do we have quorum yet?
Short one.
We're short one, so we'll temporarily lay the bill over until we
thank you,
take
members.
The bill up as, for a re-referral motion and adopt the division report. The next one is by Representative Slawik. Is she present?
No.
Okay, Paige went to get her. How about Representative Eastland? And we now have a quorum present. So we'll begin by officially calling the committee to order. And we have the minutes from March 19th. Is there a motion? Representative Hausman, did you get a chance to review them?
I did.
Motion by Representative Hausman to approve the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have, we'll take the Keeson bill, so we're just...
Mr. Chair, do we need to move a division report?
Yes, we need to move the division report. Representative Keeson, are you on it?
I'm not on the division.
Oh, is there a member of the Early Childhood Division present? We're taking care of the Thiessen bill right now. Would you care to move the division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report for the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have the Thiessen bill before us, and Representative Thiessen, would you make a motion then
I move that House File 20 be referred to the House Tax Committee, I guess without recommendation at this point, since...
I think it'd be recommended.
Okay, with recommendation, just so we can move it to tax.
Yeah, it would be a recommendation to pass, and they'll make the determination if it fits in their targets or not. Any discussion on the Thiessen motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. I guess we change seats here. Representative Slowick, if you want to... we had Eastland up there for a moment, but apparently you switched. So, Representative Slowick, you want to move your division report?
Mr. Chairman, I'm moving the division report of the bill. The division report again?
Yeah, this is for your bill on House File 123. So, Representative Slowick moves the division the Early Childhood Learning Finance Division report for House File 123. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Slowick, care to move the bill?
Yes. Move House File 123. As recommended to the tax committee?
Yeah, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And if you'd explain the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, the current law limits the education deduction and credit expenses to children in grade K through 12. What this does, it takes it down to the pre-kindergarten level. So it allows the dependent education expense deduction and the education tax credit for membership in museums, zoos, and similar institutions that offer education programs for children, pre-kindergarten educational programs.
Okay, and are there any questions of Representative Slowick? If you recall, we mentioned at the beginning, these three bills don't have a target in your division, but if they're favorably acted upon, would come out of the target in the tax committee. So any further discussion? Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Slowick, I will presumably see this in taxes, but and I believe there was already a tax credit bill where we talked about museums and zoos. Can you tell me what the policy reason is behind extending the tax credit, the education tax credit, to museum memberships and zoo memberships?
Mr. Chair, Representative Foltz, well, actually, just the origin of this bill is way back during a special session under Arnie Carlson. We passed it at the K-12 level, and this takes it down to the pre-kindergarten level. The thought was at the time for little kids, when you're talking about museums and educational experiences, you know, we don't have a public pre-K educational system. So things like museums and zoos for that younger generation, that is an educational experience for some of them, particularly if they're you know, at home with mom or with grandma, or even that may be their only place they're going to learn something outside the home.
Representative Slowick, does the existing K-12 tax credit include zoos and museums?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, no, I don't think so. I'd have to double check on that. But it does pass it way when kids do things like tutoring and for a variety of things related to K-12 education. So this is considered related to pre-K education.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll take up the Eastland bill, and Representative Slowick, I think that one went to your division as well. Would you care to make a motion for the division report? I think you're the only one that's here from your division, so it's helpful if you make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make the motion to move the Eastland bill.
Okay, the motion to adopt the division report is before us, and that's House File 1264. So Representative Slowick moves the bill. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This House File 1264 is a bill that tries to address some of the concerns, I think, that have been brought by a number of people that I've talked with, that as we move into the early childhood, formal education, early childhood arena, that we need to make sure we're very careful and walk the line very delicately with parental input into this process. So what this bill does, it creates a funding mechanism and a process that gives parents control over the kind of education that their kids will get in the preschool years, and at the same time, I think, does some things to put it under the jurisdiction of the Department of Education. So what the bill does, basically the important part of the bill starts on page 8. The first stuff is just some tax information, but on page 8, the first important thing that it does is it changes the current K-12 tax credit and takes K out of the K-12 tax credit that's currently in law, which allows for $1,000 per student. And it creates a new bracket for kindergarten and below. And so what we're doing is we're increasing the tax credit for kindergarten and below for parents who want to access services for their kids. Much of the data that we've received about what needs to happen in early childhood is using numbers like $4,000, $5,000, and $6,000 a year that need to be spent on kids before there's going to be an effective result. So what we're trying to do is put that number high enough so parents have a tax credit that they can use to spend that would actually get them enough services so they would do some have some significant effect on their kids. That's the first section of the bill. The second part of the bill that I think is probably more important is it's on the middle of page 9. It's the Childhood Access Grant Program, which is basically a scholarship program, voucher program, whatever you want to term it. We want to stay away from the inflammatory language, but it's basically a program that would allow low-income families to access dollars to send their kids to early childhood programs that would be preschool in nature or kindergarten. If they were involved in a half-day kindergarten and they wanted to go to something in addition to that, they could use this grant for that, or this scholarship for that. The scholarship is administered by the Department of Education and program, and they would find nonprofits that would actually administer the scholarships directly to eligible students. Another piece of this bill is that it provides a tax incentive for businesses to contribute to early childhood programs. We've heard lots of discussion in our committee, and I think in general, I think we all have read it in the paper that the Federal Reserve Bank, the Minnesota Chamber, the Business Partnership, there's a lot of interest in early childhood programs by the business community, and so we've created a program where the business community, corporations and others, can contribute to the scholarship fund for low-income kids and get a tax credit for that as well. So that's really what the bill does, creates a scholarship program for low-income kids, creates a tax incentive for others to make sure their children are getting good quality early childhood programs. And Mr. Chair, the bill, I think in its current form, obviously, this kind of a program is very expensive, but it's also very scalable. It can be scaled by putting income requirements in for who can qualify for the tax credit, and it can be scaled by putting limits into how much credit businesses can get in total. So I think what I'm after here is kind of a structure that tries to find a balance between the interest of the state in making sure our kids are ready for school and the interest of parents in making sure that they have a lot of say in what their kids are doing.
Okay, and because the bill would have an impact on the tax committee targets and is actually a tax credit, then it will be re-referred to the tax committee. So the chair moves that House File 1264, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion on the Eastland bill? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We are... Representative Dill, yeah, there we go. Representative Dill, House File 19. That's the name, 719, excuse me. And Representative Dill, the chair moves that House File 719 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Hey,
you can explain the bill.
It's House File 719 regards some land up in Lake County, 6,085 acres that was originally purchased by a land conservation group, and they made an agreement with the county to purchase that the county would purchase the land from the conservation group, put it into a perpetual forest to preserve forest lands and access for all types of recreation hunting. The county intends to sell bonds, which they would pay back with the proceeds coming from logging from that land, and rental of the land in the different ways that are prescribed under 282 in state statute. The way they will do that is they will suspend the payments under 282, item 4, number 3, listed on line 1.12, that would normally go to the school district, to the townships, the organized towns that are in that 6,000 acres. All of those, the townships and the school district have agreed to this, to see the importance of maintaining this 6,000 acres in perpetuity for the purposes stated. And the bill has no fiscal impact for the state in any way, only a local impact to the townships and school district and, of course, the county, because they have, that's how the, it's 40-40-20 on the split on the money that comes from the, under 282-08.
Are there any questions? And by the way, just a footnote on this one. This one was requested by the chair of the Committee on Taxes to address the policy issues only because, as you point out, it has no fiscal impact. So per her request, that's why the motion to re-refer.
One last thing, Mr. Chairman, on the bill. The bill was first introduced without the Clary Nelson Memorial Park. Claire Nelson was the commissioner in Lake County for many, many years, and he was killed in an accident in his garage changing oil on his car. This just after session began. He was very well known at the department and at the governor's office. He's been around here doing this kind of work for years and was an expert on pills, and so that's the reason that the bill was changed to memorialize that particular county commissioner.
And Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gill, two questions. Why isn't this in your omnibus lands bill? And the most important question, does the DNR support this?
Representative Dill.
Representative Howes, Mr. Chairman, the DNR does support this. The question that it is in the omnibus lands bill is a real good question. Maybe we should put it in there.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dill. Presumably, I think you pointed out that the political subdivisions are going to lose some revenue from this. Do you know how much? And I'm just curious, are they all on board with this? Because I don't think I could talk my political subdivisions into some
Representative Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin, I had originally testified when I testified here on the bill just a moment ago that all of the political subdivisions, including the school board, are in agreement on this. It would amount to $2,200,000 plus interest over the course of the time that it will take to retire those bonds. And again, one more time, all of the school district, which is one, Lake Superior School District, and the townships and towns are all in agreement, have gone on record with resolutions supporting it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, how do they intend to make up their lost revenue then?
I have not, Mr. Chair, I have not communicated that. They have not communicated that to me.
Representative Coles.
Representative Dill, I'm not familiar with 282 and what it says or doesn't say, but are there going to be any recreational use prohibitions on this land, or is it going to be open for, I know you had mentioned hunting, but other recreational uses as well?
Chairman, Representative Cole, that's one of the reasons the county wants to do this so badly, is because they want to memorialize all of those different uses on the land that exists now, which include motorized as well as non-motorized uses. This is one of the conservation type moves up there that makes sense for, you know, such a rural area. This is an extremely rural area of Lake County where the land is located.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then Chair removes or renews the motion that House File 719 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The Representative Moe is not here, and he indicated that he might be running a little bit late, so we'll be holding that bill over temporarily. Portman. Representative Portman is here, however. Okay. Mm-hmm. Representative Kahn, you were going to say?
Yes, I'd move adoption of the State Government Finance Division Report for Senate File 463.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
And I guess now I'll move that Senate File 463 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and if Representative Portman would explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a very short bill. It just permits notaries public to increase their fee, which is currently $1 per notarization, and now they can go up to $5 per notarization. In 2003, my understanding is the fee for filing to become a notary public went from $25 to $100, but the fee that notary public could charge to notarize something did not go up. And so this bill would address the fee that notaries can charge to notarize something.
Okay, and Representative Rukavina.
Where does the fee go? To the notary? To the notary?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, yes, the fee goes to the notary.
Nice. Usually fees go to the conservation officers of the DNR or the police state, so I was just wondering, hoping these weren't going
there. Any further discussion? What we generally do, and I notice you have a witness, is that the presentations are done in the divisions, and then we have people available for questions should there be any questions. So seeing none then, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Gee, is Representative Kalen here? Or Huntley? We're looking for Representative Kalen.
He's right outside the door.
Oh, is he outside the door?
Right outside. Okay. The
apparently wasn't just quite just outside. Yeah, he had the next bill up. He must have thought we were going to spend more time on the Horton bill. Let's just wait a quick second until we find Representative Kalen. I mean that he was here. So, Osbeen, if we can't find him, if you're willing to do that, maybe we'll just take the mobile up then. Is Representative Wagenius here? Or any member of her division here? Would you care to move the division report?
I'll move the division report, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion is before it. That we adopt the Environmental and Natural Resource Finance Division report for House File 849, first engrossment. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative House, if you'd care to move the bill then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that House File 849 be sent to the General Register, I believe.
Yes. Okay. The motion is that House File 849, first engrossment to be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair and members, the bill was non-controversial in committee, and there was a controversial amendment that was tried to, some folks were trying to put on the bill, but it did not succeed, so as the bill stands, it's non-controversial.
Okay, Representative Dunn.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question, and maybe it's more appropriate for the floor, but I just want to raise it as a question that I'd like to raise. I have problems with the concept of preemption. And I have concept of the concept, you know, I always like it when we set a floor for state standards, but I never understand why we want to prohibit a county from going further if they want to have a higher level of protection. But I'm not raising that as an amendment in this committee, but I'm just raising it as a general issue. I just think it's bad state policy unless there's some reason for having everything, you know, everything be exactly the same. And I guess I don't see the reason here. Local units of government usually have a lot of power. And as I said, I like the idea of a floor, but not a ceiling.
Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we're losing resorts daily.
Yeah.
And the bill just allows us to, it actually creates, the state is saying to our local units of government, we don't want you to put resorts out of business. And you know, currently on some areas, if your cabin burns, you can't even replace it. So all this bill is saying is that the local units of government cannot shut down a resort if their cabin burns down. They will allow them to rebuild it on the same footprint. It also does allow the resort to increase the footprint if they need to meet federal, state, or local standards or codes. So even though it is preemptive, it's very gently preemptive.
Well, the Chairman, I'd just like to hear a good, not obviously not today, but I'd like to hear a good argument about why it needs to be preemptive at all. I would think those local units of government would, even more than we're concerned with, would want to make sure that those resorts can be. So anything we could do to loosen that preemptive language would just make me feel more comfortable. And particularly with some of the work that's going on. I think there's some really interesting work that's just been approved by, I don't know that we have any of the members here right now, by the LCCMR with Cass County and the DNR working on a new, some kind of innovative zoning issue. And I hate those kinds of things to be prohibited by preemptive language. So I'd like to make sure that those kinds of looking for set of solutions to stuff is allowed, and with in complete sympathy with most of what the bill is with what the bill is doing, except for that one aspect.
Representative Westrom,
Mr. Chair, to the author, I was going to ask for a 30-second explanation, but I think we just got it. Representative Houses, is this is just dealing with the resort and the issue of preemption? The reason I ask, the other morning, I was doing some work at my apartment, and I flipped on Channel 17, and I heard a discussion of an amendment which was being offered for statewide shoreland rules. That is nowhere in this bill, and some of the discussion I heard why we needed it, and then some people saying, well, it's not going to hurt me because I've already got my property, so go ahead and do it to the rest of the people. Disturbing discussion and philosophy that I hear people talking about. Is there anything like that in this bill right now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, no. This deals only with resorts, and there is a resorts are defined in the first section here very clearly. So it is just resorts.
Thanks.
We got Representative Cornish.
This is a good bill. I heard it in committee, and about the preemption, I don't know if you'd really call it preemption or by another name. We got a check and balance system, and this one, the zoning was going overboard, and I think it was the state's duty to step in and save the industry, and I think it's a good bill, and it gives some attention where it's needed. It's not going to be used carte blanche just for the specific instance. It's really good.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Powers, this is a good bill, but I wonder, there's one word that I'm a little concerned about, and apparently it isn't. I thought I saw it somewhere else. when you say structure, that doesn't mean my concern is where I've run into it in the past where you have a drainage structure. You don't increase the capacity for drainage, but you might have to put it between a channel for opening it up for a boat. And it doesn't structure in that effect. That's not a structure, according to Bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader, no. It defines what a resort is, and we're dealing basically with the sleeping quarters, cooking quarters, that type of thing.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then Representative Hackbarth renews his motion that House File 849, the first engrossment, to be read.
Mr. Chairman, that was Representative House.
Oh, excuse me, Representative House.
Okay, but
Representative House moves that House File 849, first engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That was Hackbarth that moved the division report. Yeah. So, okay, let's see. I think we found Representative Kalin. We had all kinds of people out to locate you. They said you were just outside the door. And,
I was indeed, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your patience and your flexibility.
No, that's fine. We just took up another bill, and so didn't slow us down much at all. Representative Hilty.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the Energy Finance and Policy Division report for House File 1221, first engrossment.
That motion is before us. Any discussion then on the division report? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would further move that House File 1221, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Mr. Chair, I also have a delete all amendment to move.
Okay, that motion is before us, and let's take up the delete all amendment then. I assume that's what you'd like to use for the presentation of the bill.
I would, Mr. Chair. We'll also have two small oral amendments when you're ready.
Okay. Representative Hilty, the delete all amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the H-1221 DE-2 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Did you want to take those oral amendments up now as well, then?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
If you could suggest them, and I think Representative Hilty then will move them on your behalf.
I will do so, Mr. Chair. There are two of them. The first is on page 3, line 24. The first of, as you read it, should actually read and. So strike of, replace it with and, to read the magnitude and timing.
Give us the location of that again.
Page 3, line 24.
Line 24, okay.
Again, it's delete the first of and insert the word and. So it should read the magnitude and timing of.
Okay, what was your second?
And the second is on page 12, line 17. In the spirit of all the technical cleanup changes that we've made in the DE2 amendment, Energy Star buildings are actually only Energy Star labeled rather than Energy Star certified. And so I suggest deleting the first certified on line 17, page 12, and inserting the word labeled to conform with the same term on line 15.
Okay, does everybody have those two oral amendments?
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption.
Representative Hilty moves adoption of the amendments. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. And Representative Galen, if you'd explain the bill as amended.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill before you is the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Bill that I've worked very closely with the Governor's staff at the Department of Commerce, with the Chamber of Commerce, our utility partners, and other advocates for energy efficiency. The focus of the bill is twofold. First is to establish a statewide goal of energy savings of 1.5% of all energy in gas retail sales and electric retail sales. The second is to really focus on the conservation improvement program and move from the current requirements of spending money to the new requirement, as the governor has called for achieving energy savings results. And we're asking each utility to be responsible for at least two-thirds of that 1.5% goal. By focusing on the results, we have a couple of pieces that need be beefed up within the SIP program, and that's why that's where the assessments come in. And the assessments are on pages 11 and 12. The department, to make the entire SIP program run more efficiently, the department needs to engage in some technical activities, including statewide energy savings assumptions, so that we have the same assumptions being made across the state, and also to ease the filing process, frankly, for all of the utilities. So the department is asking for $800,000 for the first 2 years until June 30th, 2009, at which that point the amount will drop down to $450,000. And the other guaranteed assessment is the $500,000 assessment that the department may assess for facilities energy efficiency. And that is actually just a continuation of the ongoing work for the Buildings Benchmarks and Beyond program that you all established in 2001 that is working very well to monitor the energy use in our publicly owned buildings, and also to work with the utilities to reach the governor's goal of 1,000 Energy Star labeled commercial buildings and the goal of 100 LEED certified commercial buildings as well. I just want to talk about one more assessment and then the mechanism, and then I will be done with my presentation of the bill. At the bottom of page 11, I'll just read quickly. The commissioner may assess up to $3.6 million annually for research and development. As we move from requiring money to be spent to requiring energy savings results, we wanted to make sure that the long-term research and development that's needed for innovation, and this is applied research and development, so we can achieve those energy savings goals, we want to make sure that that level of R&D is maintained. And that level right now is $3.6 million. We believe that the department will not need to assess this large amount, but that should any utility find that it's more cost-effective for them to focus solely on the programs and the initiatives of the SIP program, then the department will be able to ensure that the research and development of statewide significance is ongoing. So we believe that that $3,600,000 assessment level will probably never be realized, but that will be somewhere much lower than that. And all these assessments on, as you'll see in Subdivision 2A on page 14, go into the energy and conservation account in the Special Revenue Fund. So, in essence, these are pass-through assessments that are assessed of the utility and go directly into the SIP activities. And I believe that's the crux of the bill. And I will stand for questions, of course, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Kalin. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kalin, on page 23, I see that you're requiring every lease in the state of Minnesota that has a landlord agreement with a renter. And right now there's basically an encouragement that weather stripping, clocking, and storm windows be put in place to save energy, which I think we all agree with. But you're striking that and replacing it with make the premises reasonably energy efficient by installing weather stripping, clocking, storm windows, and storm doors when any such measure will result in energy procurement cost savings based on current and projected average residential energy costs in Minnesota that will exceed the cost of implementing that measure, including interest, amortized over the 10-year period following the incurring of the cost. Who's going to figure all this out if you're some guy who owns a duplex in Burnsville? You know, we're putting this into state law, and what's wrong with current law? Because I think, you know, everyone gets the guide if you do own these properties and whatnot. Someone's got to figure this all out, and I'm not sure that we want to put this in. I'm willing to listen to your explanation, but, you know, there's a lot of parts of the bill I agree with, but this is one that just strikes me as being somewhat onerous for just some guy who owns a rental property somewhere.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for the gender confusion earlier. Thank you, Representative Seifert. I think the most of the low-income portions of the bill, in fact, all the low-income portions of the bill, have gone through a rigorous consensus process with the utilities, the Energy Sense organization, and the department. And I'm actually going to just hand it over to Jeremy DeFebre from the State Energy Office, who can give a little more background on that specific language, we hope.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, Representative Kalin, this isn't for just low-income people, is my understanding. It's in every lease or license of residential premises. So maybe it's a section that pertains only to low-income properties, Section 8 or what have you, but we'll let the testifier answer that. Maybe I'm wrong when I'm reading this.
Yes, Representative Kalin, or did you want to defer to Mr. DeFebre?
First, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Seifert. I do believe, actually, you are correct that it is broader than just the low-income piece, but this is something I believe is worked out with the multi-housing organization, but I will defer to the department for a brief explanation.
Yeah. Mr. DeFebre, state your name, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeremy DeFebre, and I work at the Department of Commerce. The language that Representative Seifert refers to is actually being moved from a portion of statute that currently exists that is part of the repealer. And so it's really not a new burden. It borrows language that exists, a standard that already exists in statute. And we did actually insert this language at the behest of the Multifamily Housing Association.
Madam Chair, I guess, you know, I'm fine with that we should be doing caulking. I mean, that's just common sense that we should have as energy efficient as possible. But I'm just wondering that last portion after the comma saying that will exceed the cost of implementing the measure, including interest and all that stuff. Is there someone from that association that could say why that's necessary? Why don't we just say you should do this instead of all the other monkey juice language that nobody understands that, you know, who's going to figure all that out? Is there someone that could testify to that?
Representative Kalin?
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert, I don't see anyone from the Multifamily Housing Association here, but Ms. Bruisman from the department is also here, who runs the SIP program. Perhaps she could speak to this specific instance as well about how it's calculated, or maybe Mr. DeFebre can also speak to how it's currently calculated since it's current statute.
Thank you. Mr. DeFebre?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Seifert. The burden is, and I'm not an expert in this area, but my understanding is the burden in this area would be on the landlord to demonstrate if a tenant were to press a claim that to do any of these measures mentioned is not cost-effective within this definition. The Multifamily Housing Association asked for a definition of cost effectiveness so that there was not an open-ended requirement to do these things regardless of whether it paid for itself or not. And this is the language that they requested.
Yeah, that's all I need, actually, Madam Chair. That makes sense that they want a little more particular definition in the statute so they can put something together. When I put all of it together, it would look like it'd be pretty broad-based if they didn't have the language, although I still think it makes sense for people to have energy efficiency without the law having to tell them that. But if that's something that we think is necessary, I'm fine with it.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Seifert. I appreciate the opportunity to actually speak about the majority of the technical cleanup changes in the amendment as well. Go exactly to the heart of your question, which is the cost effectiveness and the calculation of it. And throughout the bill, one of the things that we cleaned up from our bill that we passed, the engrossment that came out of the Energy Committee, is strengthening the cost-effectiveness test to ensure that energy conservation, energy efficiency will be pursued only if it's cheaper, as it is currently, by five times cheaper than new generation and buying new power. So throughout the bill, you'll see those kinds of definitions to make sure that we are in the neighborhood of 1 to 1.5 cents a kilowatt hour for savings versus the 6.5 to 7 cents a kilowatt hour for new generation.
Thank you, Representative Kalin. Are there any further questions? Representative Sigum.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Kalin. Maybe you could just give me another proposal of the bill. What's the total cost, the total assessments, annual, total number of new state hires, state employees we're going to hire, all in the name of good? Give me the nuts and bolts of what it's going to cost ratepayers in Minnesota, okay?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Sigum. The first, I'll just do the sort of 20,000 foot view, and then for the finer terrain, I'll hand it over to Ms. Brusman. The cost to ratepayers is actually a significant avoided cost, because again, the cost of purchasing new power and generating new power is in the neighborhood of 6 to 6.5 cents a kilowatt hour, very conservatively. And the documented cost among the four investor-owned utilities in the Big Stone proceeding was at actually just under 1 cent a kilowatt hour. We think that a generous calculation is really about 1.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So as long as it's more efficient to, more cost-effective to gain energy savings through energy efficiency and conservation, the utilities will continue to pursue that. And then as soon as it's not cost-effective, they won't. So it's actually a savings down the road to our ratepayers. In terms of the specific assessments, the two guaranteed assessments of the technical assistance and the facility's energy efficiency, the first 2 years are $1,300,000, and then after June 30th, 2009, they become $950,000. And then, of course, there's the safety valve of the $3,600,000 research and development that can be assessed if the utilities don't engage in those activities, although every indication that we have is that they will continue to do so.
So, Madam Chairman,
Representative Sigum.
$5 million.
Representative Kalin.
Keeping in mind that the $3,600,000 is currently being invested by the utilities in research and development, so whether they're doing it on their own or they're partnering with the department and vacating those activities directly and asking the department to do it instead. So we're really talking about $1,300,000 for the first 2 years of new money.
So, Madam Chairman, Representative Kalin, I'm trying to cut between the lines of what you're saying. $5 million to do what they're doing already, to do what the utilities are doing already, with the same incentives and the same goals and making the market make the decision. $5 million to the utilities. The utilities aren't going to pay it, though, right? Don't we have any rate increase in here, an automatic rate increase to make sure that I get to pay it rather than the utility?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Sigum. Again, $3,600,000 is currently being invested by the utilities for research and development. So whether it's an assessment, whether they're paying the department to engage in those activities or engaging in them themselves, that $3,600,000 cost will not change. The other pieces are pieces that the utilities have agreed to, and there is, of course, cost recovery in here. But again, it is the energy conservation and efficiency programs must be cost-effective. So the choice is purchasing power at a greater expense on off the grid or through new generation, or doing it more cheaply beyond what the market can achieve right now. That's why it's called a conservation improvement program rather than just a conservation program. And so this actually is an avoided cost for ratepayers, a very significant avoided cost. And it's just one other point that the Department of Energy at the federal level has failed to meet. The Government Accountability Office just published this report. They have failed to meet every single one of the 34 deadlines for energy efficiency established by Congress in the last decade. And the avoided cost that lost, so in other words, the savings that we have lost because of the inaction by the Federal Department of Energy amounts to $28 billion.
Ms. Brusen, did you have a comment on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Christy Brusen from the Department of Commerce. And to Representative Spigum's point, I think one way to look at this $5 million is that it's appearing on the state books for the first time. These are costs that our utilities have already engaged in through the SIP program. As Representative Kalin alluded to, the 3.6 is what they're currently investing in R&D. This is the first time it appears in the state books because they've been doing it individually, utility by utility. And so there may be, for example, an air conditioning quality installation program that Minnesota Power starts. Well, then, in order for Xcel to look into it, they might do a separate R&D project. And then maybe Otter Tail wants to do it, and they'll do a separate R&D project so that it begins to work in all those service territories. But what we've said is it's better to have a comprehensive statewide approach to R&D so that we're only doing that project once, and then that all of that information is shared publicly by all of our utilities so they can all pick up that program and move forward with it without having to reinvest in R&D to move forward. And so even though the fiscal impact shows a significant increase to the state, it's really just the first time these dollars have showed up on the state books. They have been assessed prior to that by our utilities to their ratepayers separately.
Madam Chair,
Representative Spigum.
Four new state employees. Primary comment.
Madam Chair, Brewster. Representative Spigum, 3.5 at the department and 0.5 at the Public Utilities Commission. Yes.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to follow this. It's Monday morning. It's fairly early. It was a long weekend or a short weekend, I guess, depending on your perspective. But Representative Kalin, if they're already doing $3.6 million worth of this type of research and development, what are we getting for the additional $1.4 million that we're now going to require them to pay? That's where I'm not tracking this all the way through.
Madam Chair, Representative Bowles, the number one, the largest thing that we gain is consistency and statewide application through the technical assistance. The most important and most urgent project is the statewide energy savings assumptions. So right now we have the same product, the same conservation improvement program initiative applied in one part of the state is not accounted for the same energy savings as another part of the state. So the largest part is getting everyone up to speed and on the same level to actually make the whole program more consistent, but also make everything run more efficiently so that we maintain that statewide significance and really can make this thing rock and roll and really sing and get to what we know is an aggressive goal of 1.5% energy savings, but one that I'll just point out that our friends at Xcel Energy, CenterPoint, Minnesota Power, and even our co-ops and munis, while they're of course have a lot of questions for it, they've worked with us very closely to make sure that this works. Varying degrees of support, of course, but so this is something that they all recognize will happen and needs to happen to make the system more reliable at the least cost and with no emissions, or very little emissions.
Thank you. Ms. Brusen, did you have a point to make?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Coles, there are two things in particular that the additional dollars will get us. One of those is a statewide assumptions tool. Right now at the department, every time a utility proposes an energy conservation program, the department has engineers on staff that review their energy savings assumptions and say, for example, for a CFL, if you're changing out an incandescent light with a compact fluorescent light, we review that to see what each utility is counting for savings, because that should be the same number in whichever utility you're located in. And right now we're spending staff time to do that for every municipal, every cooperative, and every investor-owned utility. And this will give us one tool so that the utilities can go to a website, say, I've switched out, you know, this incandescent or this incandescent bulb for a CFL. I'm going to get, you know, for example, 66 kWh. And they will all know that going forward. So we won't have to review it, and they won't have to spend the time individually wondering whether or not we're going to approve it. That's point one. The other thing is with the $500,000 for the B3 tool, the building benchmarking and beyond, what that ongoing funding will allow us to do is to take the tool that we have now which will tell us how a building is performing, a state building is performing against the energy code, and it will allow that building to compare its own energy use before it does an energy efficiency measure to after, so that the building operator knows whether or not that building is performing as it should after it made an improvement. So those are the two things we'll get from that additional funding.
Thank you, Ms. Brusen. Representative Westrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kalin. Maybe first, I see there's a piece about decoupling in the summary. Could you just explain that for the committee so we know what we're going to be doing going forward? And then I've got a couple follow-up questions.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, I'm trying to make this very as succinct as possible. But I think to do so requires, again, a zoom out real quick. When a utility goes before the Public Utilities Commission on a general rate case, one of the steps that is currently sort of the foundational step is determining how much revenue the utility is entitled to capture from a class of ratepayers. And so currently that decision is made, and then rates are set, and then the utility's interest is to sell as much energy as possible so the units of energy exceed what was determined at the PUC or similar, so that they can actually make more money by selling more power or more natural gas. In the declining market of natural gas specifically, one of the concerns is that the cost of infrastructure is great, but as the market declines, their revenue does not keep up with it. What decoupling does is say that step of deciding how much revenue a utility can capture from that class of ratepayers is constant, so that if all of us at the table, all the representatives at the table, including myself, are in the same class of ratepayers, and Representative Westrom, you're aggressively saving energy through energy conservation and efficiency, your share of that revenue capture will go down while all the rest of us will actually end up contributing the excess costs distributed over all of us. So it becomes, rather than in the utility's interest to keep selling power or selling natural gas, it becomes in everyone's interest to save energy and save electricity. And that's the essence of decoupling. What the bill proposes is a three-year pilot plan for one or more regulated utilities. We believe that they will be only natural gas. And then at the end of the 3 years, any extension beyond the 3 years has to be approved in a general rate case by the Public Utilities Commission. And we're also requiring a report back to this body and to the Senate as well on the success of those programs so we can adjust it as we go along. Complicated stuff and tough to describe in 2 or 3 minutes.
So,
thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin.
Representative Westrom.
A three-year pilot project, but it's out of the hands of the legislature. Why not do a sunset at least so the issue is forced back to the legislature? Because I'm still thinking people are not understanding. What are we actually decoupling, Representative Kalin? There's an assurance that the utility companies are going to get their money, and the ratepayers, my concern with decoupling, you also have a possible incentive to not have the utility go out and find the best bid because they can get some of that cost recovered no matter what their sales become. And so can you explain a little bit more of that, and why not a sunset for 3 years rather than just a report back and the PUC can go ahead in 3 years and extend it?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom. The structure of the bill actually has a three-year sunset. Pilot program may not exceed 3 years in length is the language on page 19, line 26 and 27. The reason why we have the report is is so that we can, it's actually an annual report, so that we can adjust and make an educated decision as a body about whether we want to remove the restriction and allow for decoupling to continue beyond those 3 years. The only extension that can be provided without legislative action is a general rate case, unless the decoupling program was previously approved as part of a general rate case. So the general rate case is expensive, it's rigorous, it has a lot of input from all sorts of parties, and actually I know that one of the biggest skeptics of decoupling is the Chamber of Commerce, and we've actually even incorporated some language in here so they can have more input in the initial pilot project. And I guarantee you that if they're not happy with it, and the legislature having annual reports, or we are not happy with it, there will be a lot of input and a lot of reform made as we go along. But frankly, by decoupling revenue from units of energy sold, we're removing the incentive to waste energy and inserting an incentive to be more energy efficient and save energy.
Thank you, Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair,
Representative Westrum.
I'm not quite done yet. So, Representative Kalin, on the decoupling, I first understood you to say the PUC could extend it. I'll look a little closer, but I maybe think we should do a more hard sunset if we're going to try this. Secondly, the SIP is being changed, and currently there's expenditures that are paid for out of SIP for conservation or renewable research. The 5% of Excel SIP goes to help fund the hydrogen and renewable energy research at the University of Minnesota. When this goes away, what's going to fund that funding? And there's also language that allows up to 5% of utilities conservation dollars, SIP dollars, to displace fossil fuels by partnering with communities or entrepreneurs or developers of renewable energy projects. What's going to happen to that 5% potential pot of money that developers in renewable energy developers that are in your district and mine and others throughout the state that might partner with the Minnesota Power and Outer Tail Power and Xcel Energy to use some of those conservation dollars to displace fossil fuels? What's going to replace that 5% and any other funds that go up of the SIP fund? Where are those monies going to come from?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrum, I think you know that I'm a passionate advocate for research and for the exact activities that you're talking about. Of course, as you have pointed out, the R&D that we're funding in this bill or ensuring goes on is applied energy efficiency and conservation research and development. But I'd actually like to defer to Chair Hilty to maybe address the issue of the specific renewables research mechanism.
Representative Hilty, to that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrum, in the energy omnibus finance bill that we will be doing a run through of this afternoon, I think you're aware that one of the proposals is to fund the Institute for Renewable Energy and the Environment, which you're referring at a level of $5 million a year, and to roll that into the base of the Department of Commerce budget so that they don't have to come back begging every year for funding. And as part of that transition, we are extending the Xcel Energy contribution for the next 2 years, and then our budget will be picking up the ongoing cost of that program. And of course there are proposals in the finance bill as well for financing considerable amount of research and development. Basically we're following the governor's recommendations and the recommendations of your caucus in that regard.
Representative Wesley.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin and Representative Hilty. But the, another fund, and I, it is based on changing this, is then based on the new funds we may or may not get. Hopefully we, that survives through conference committee. But what happens if we change this and that doesn't survive, Representative Hilty? Or the other part that I asked about is the current law that allows the utilities spend up to 5% on renewable energy development. As I understand it, Representative Kalin, that's going to be erased under this new law, isn't it?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrum, I give you my word right now that I will passionately advocate and insist that we have that money for research and development for renewables. And we'll do everything in my power, and I know that Chair Hilty is also a passionate advocate of that research. And so we will not let that fall through the cracks one bit.
Thank you. Representative Earhart, do you have a question?
Well, I had a kind of a general question, Madam Chair, but I see, first of all, I was going, and our quest for energy conservation here as we move ahead, is anyone in this finance committee or in the legislature or in the private sector keeping a running total on the cost of the taxpayer? We have a number of bills or initiatives that are moving around, and I think we also ought to be concerned what we're going to charge the consumer of electricity. And I sure would like to have somebody say, well, on the back of a napkin, at least, I know this is going to mean a $10, $15, $20, $50 raise to the consumer a month. I mean, is anybody thinking about that? Or
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Earhart, I've had that very question at the forefront of my brain as we've been working through the Energy Committee and reading through the record of, let's say, Big Stone 2, which is, we have a pretty thorough, sort of the most up-to-date record of the costs of business as usual. To supply power, just the bus bar cost, so it doesn't actually include transmission and distribution, we're talking in the neighborhood of 5.6 cents a kilowatt hour to 6.7 cents a kilowatt hour. Energy conservation and efficiency programs are between 1 and 1.5 cents a kilowatt hour. And we know that by being more aggressive with this in this bill and as the governor has asked us to do, your good friend, the governor, we know that the cost will increase for conservation. So even being generous and saying that the cost might double because you have to penetrate that market more deeply, even at 3 cents a kilowatt hour, we're still at less than half of the cost of new generation. But there are several definitions of the cost-effective tests that are in the bill that will that do say that if we're going to proceed on this consumption rate of 2.5% increase every year, that if it's more cost-effective to produce new power than it is to do energy conservation, then by all means we should add more power to the system. But right now, it continues to be more cost-effective to do energy conservation beyond what appears on the bottom line of businesses and our residential homes. But the reality is, from a system-wide approach, it is cheaper to pursue energy conservation today, and we believe that it will continue to be. But like I said, those cost-effective measures ensure that the ratepayer is actually saving money and avoiding future costs rather than absorbing them.
Madam Chair, I think I was talking in broader terms than we're looking at right here. I mean, we introduced and passed and will be passing energy conservation, new forms of biomass, et cetera, winds, transmission lines. All of this is going to, somebody's going to have to pay for it, and I'm just wondering how rapidly we can beat on the tax. And, you know, we've got certainly people from the energy companies that I never hear from, because I'm not on the committee, and I don't know if you hear from the ratepayers at all. And, you know, selectively, maybe we do save money here and there, but all of this is going to cost more money. And it may be that's the only way to save the earth or whatever, but somebody should be keeping track of this. So all of a sudden, we don't wake up like we open our property tax bill and I got a $600 increase and we find that my electric bill has gone up $50 or $75 or $100 or whatever. That's what I'm talking about.
Representative Healthy, do you have a question?
Just a comment, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart. These are matters that both the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission pays close attention to, and I don't have figures on the top of my head, but I can tell you one thing, which is that not doing anything is going to be more expensive than what we're trying to do.
Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, I guess as relates to Representative Earhart's question is I don't know how many kilowatt hours I use, you know, each month, but what have they figured out, like on a monthly basis for an average family, what this would cost? I don't know, what 5.6 to 6.7 or whatever. What would that mean for an average consumer? Because I'm not on the committee, I don't know what that 1.3 cents doesn't mean much to most people if it's per kilowatt hour, but if you use a lot, and obviously businesses and larger farms, if you're using milking machines and things that take a lot of electricity, you're talking about a lot more energy and a lot more money. Is there anything calculated out, whether the department or the author? I don't care who answers it.
Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert, my training is in architecture and planning, so I think about things to scale and look at where's the biggest opportunity for savings, first of all, and I always believed that the taconite plants that are up in Representative Sertich's district, when I heard the number $90 million for their electrical bills, I thought that was an annual bill, and that kind of floored me. And then I learned that it was a monthly bill. So $1 billion a year for electricity. So if we're talking about 1% savings, we're talking about significant bottom line savings that need to be achieved and can help businesses really rock and roll beyond, again, what they do that the market captures. For families, again, I mean, we can just do the math that, the difference between 6 cents a kilowatt hour and, let's say, even being generous, 2 to 3 cents a kilowatt hour for conservation, we can have some real significant savings down the road. Perhaps Ms. Bruseman can talk about a per household kilowatt hour number, but...
Ms. Bruseman.
Madam Chair, and excuse me, Representative Seifert, we don't have a great calculation for what this bill will cost for an average household because it's a different setup than what we're doing now. I can tell you now that as a utility customer, you're paying roughly 1.5 cents or 1.5% of your utility's gross operating revenue. So about 1.5% is a charge related to SIP. But the difficult thing to consider is that while you see a SIP charge, you don't see the charge for what the utility didn't charge you for more power. So you're not seeing an avoided cost. You'll see SIP on your bill in some cases, although I think Marshall Municipal Utility doesn't have a line item. They pass it through as part of their wholesale cost of doing business. But some utilities like Xcel have a rider, and you'll see that, and it's volumetric, so it'll change depending on how much you use. But we don't have a calculation with the new goal as to what it'll cost because those costs, we're hoping that they'll stay within the 1 cent per kWh, maybe as much as double. But it's still not going, we don't have a figure on a new rate for SIP, and it'll vary by utility to some degree.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Actually, Representative Earhart had a question.
Well, Madam Chair, for Representative Hilty, but I was just thinking of something you said. Everyone has a calculation of what a 10 cent gas tax increase will cost for the average family. I don't know why we can't get one for kilowatt hours because you know what the average home consumes and so forth and so on.
Representative Kalin.
Madam Chair and all members of the committee, I will actually get that information for you by Wednesday with the specific average household kilowatt hour usage and then extend it out in business as usual, the 6 to 7 cents a kilowatt hour, and then talk about what getting some of that new use through conservation the new demand through conservation, what the impact on the household would be as well.
And Madam Chair, and Representative Kalin, I'm not necessarily picking on your bill here, but there's a whole pile of them that are moving through the process here. And when we start adding the kilowatt hours increase from each bill, where are we at? That's what I'm asking. Is anybody keeping track of it with the taxpayers?
Representative Kalin.
Representative Earhart, I'll answer your yes or no question with a yes. The Public Utilities Commission, Chair Hilty, the department, members of both members of the committee here as well as members of the committee across the street, and Chairs Anderson and Pretner Solon were all very carefully watching that.
I hope they let us know before the legislature is out here.
Representative Coles.
Well, I'll be brief, Madam Chair. To Representative Earhart and Representative Seifert's point, I think Representative Earhart, Representative Seifert, the answer to the questions you're posing, I'm going to wade through all of the bureaucratic gobbledygook that we just heard. The answer is we don't have a clue. Representative Kalin says he's going to give us something by Wednesday. I look forward to seeing it. But right now, the answer is we don't have a clue. We kind of like this idea of doing more energy conservation. Absolutely, I do too. It makes complete sense. But we're taking this away from the market again. We're creating this state program to do this. Right now, we don't have a clue. So Representative Kalin, I hope that the information you provide us by Wednesday is insightful and can help answer, at least for your bill, Representative Earhart's question. But right now, we're kind of walking with blinders on Representative Seifert, Representative Earhart. That's at least what I can determine. I think that's what the bureaucratic gobbledygook that we just heard was.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Coles, the cost of business as usual, we don't have a clue. I asked this of every single utility that came before our committee over the last 2 to 3 weeks. The cost of business as usual, we don't have a clue. And the bureaucratic gobbledygook, to use your phrase, is precisely what we get when we ask, what's the cost of business as usual? What we do know is the public record presented by the utilities and the letter from the Department of Commerce in the Big Stone 2 case, just it's the most recent generation facility that we have, so it's the most up-to-date current record, shows that, again, 1 cent per kilowatt hour, 1.5 cents per kilowatt hour for conservation, 5.6 to 6.7 cents a kilowatt hour for generation. So they're not willing to tell us what the cost of business as usual will be. What we know is that there's a cheaper alternative, and so long as it's the lowest cost resource, we need to pursue it. As soon as it becomes something other than the lowest cost, then we will pursue the alternative.
Representative Figham.
I'm sorry for prolonging this. I realize the bill's going to pass. I know a lot here. This is one member of the legislature who's been here for some 25 plus years. We've been talking about conservation and doing conservation for 25 plus years in this state. This is not a new idea. This is not anything. And I have to be one of the politically incorrect and the politically honest form that believes you need to do conservation and you need more power. We need more power. I have to be one of the politically naive people that think if the taconite company is spending $90 million a year, they have a built-in incentive to try to conserve. They're going to try to make their product better and more efficiently. I happen to believe that the market does work. And like Representative Coles has great concerns about the gobbledygook, the government being involved with the master planners. And I'm just sorry for being a little naive and a little incorrect. But I know ultimately, Earhart, it goes back in the ratepayer. It goes back on you and me and the planners. And they're going to pay the bill for more government, for more planning that the market's doing anyway and taking care of anyway. Madam Chairman, just tell me about the bill itself, Mr. Kalin. As this bill moves forward, we have some energy plants on the horizon. Big Stone 2, you mentioned. There's one up in, I think, Representative Surge or Representative Solberg's district are they going to be negatively affected, the consequence of getting more power in the state by passage of this bill or not? Just tell me no, it's not, because we need more power.
Representative Kalin.
Representative Sigham, First, the global picture again. We use 2.5% more electricity every year. What this bill says, the governor has laid out this aggressive goal saying let's move from 2.5% growth down to 1% growth. That's still growth. And one of the things that that I've always been concerned about is that we not be perceived as saying we don't need more power, because we cannot proceed on a growth scale. Even if we're getting that wedge from conservation, we're still growing. So we need more power. So this bill will not endanger either of those plants.
Are there any further questions? Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, one quick one is that we used to get an idea of how many new FTEs there were with the bill. Do you have an idea of... I had to step out for a minute. Was it four?
Madam Chair, Representative Seifert.
Representative Kalin.
The fiscal note shows that it is four. It's 3.5 to the department and 1/2 to the Public Utilities Commission.
Are there any further questions? Hearing none, Representative Hilty renews his motion to move House File 1221 as amended to Ways and Means. All in favor?
Amended to pass, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Anyway, recommended to pass. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
We have Representative Huntley's bill next. And Representative Huntley moves to adopt the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 305, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion on the Huntley motion? You did so move. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Huntley, would you care to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 305 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Okay, and that would be the first engrossment. So Representative Huntley moves to amend House File 305, the first committee engrossment, to be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. That motion is before us. Representative Huntley, if you would care to explain the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the Freedom to Breathe Act. What it does is treat all workplaces the same in this state, which means that workplaces like restaurants, like bars, like public transportation facilities, where there are workers present, that smoking will be prohibited. The implementation is currently January 1, 2009, and the penalties have been changed a little bit. It's a petty misdemeanor for a person that smokes where he's not supposed to smoke, and it's a petty misdemeanor for a an owner of an establishment that allows smoking. Mr. Chair and members, I look at this as a Workers' Protection Act. It gives waitresses, bartenders, the same right as most workers have elsewhere to not be have dangerous substances where they work. It's quite clear from the Surgeon General's report that secondhand smoke is hazardous to the health, and so I would again urge you to protect workers across this state and vote for this amendment, or excuse me, this bill.
Mr. Chair. I think we have Representative Severson. Would you want to comment at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And this is not just some small report that's been put together. Over 22 experts put together each and their expertise in this particular area, sent it on to over 40 peers for review. Those results went out to more than 30 scientists for verifying the scientific evidence that came out in this report. So this is not something that has just been put out over the last couple of years. This is since 1986. This has some valid findings in it, irrefutable findings. And number four, the executive summary says, scientific evidence indicates there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Some people can resist, through their immune system, secondhand smoke better than others. But what this bill does is it creates a level playing field to extract that carcinogen, that bad stuff, out of the places where we go to meet, we go to eat. And so, members, I would strongly encourage, it's time for us as policymakers to take a stand here and to get rid of smoke in public places. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay. We do have three amendments that are at the desk. We'll entertain a brief discussion perhaps at this point because I see Representative Seifert has a question, and then we'll go to the amendments. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's two questions, Mr. Chair. If Representative Huntley and Severson could look at page 2. I'm trying to figure out the significant individual question. On line 2.14, it says, vehicles used in whole or in part for work purposes are places of employment during hours of operation if more than one person is present, unless the only other person in the vehicle is the driver's significant individual, as defined in 1C. Then you go down to 1C, you know, and I'm thinking this is your girlfriend or your partner or whatever you want to call it. Then you go down and it says, for purposes of this act, significant individual means one additional adult designated by the driver to be present in a vehicle that is used whole or in part for work purposes. I mean, this sounds really odd to me, to put this significant individual, I mean, what are we starting here? I don't, Representative Severson, you've had some involvement in this type of terminology in other bills. What are we doing here? This concerns me, putting this in statute.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert, this relates to basically the truck drivers, and many cross-country truck drivers go with their spouses. And this was an attempt to say that even though it's a workplace, that if a truck driver and a spouse want to smoke in the truck, I really don't care. This is Representative Dean's amendment.
So this is how this, Mr. Chairman, this is how we're saying a person in a trucker's cab. We came up with this.
That's what that was an attempt to do.
Any further discussion?
I have one more, Mr. Chair. The other question, I guess, is one that came up here a couple weeks ago when I was at an establishment in my district, and that's on page 5. And this might be an easy one that we could amend with just a simple two-word change. And Representative Huntley, I don't know if you have a real particular thought about this, but on line 5.6 it says, the proprietor, other person, or entity in charge of a public place, public meeting, public transportation, or place of employment must not provide smoking equipment, including ashtrays or matches, in areas where smoking is prohibited. And the restaurant that I was at, they have these little candle things in the middle of the table for romantic atmosphere, I guess you'd say. And they keep matches up on the counter to when someone comes in, so they light this candle to show someone's occupying the table. And they said that what they had heard was that we were banning the ability for them to have a pack of matches next to the cash register to light. I don't even remember if that place is either. I don't even know that they can smoke in there now. But to me, I said, well, I find that hard to believe that's in the bill. And we looked it up, and it was in there. I'm okay, but I guess, you know, if we're going to have non-smoking, it would make sense not to have ashtrays laying around. But I really question whether we want to ban matches when they use them for ambiance or for reserving a table or so forth. And I don't know if you'd be amenable to taking those two words out or what the purpose of having that in there.
Let's give Representative Huntley a chance to respond.
Mr. Chair, that was certainly not our intent, and I would accept striking or matches on line 5.6 as a friendly amendment.
Representative
I think Representative Seifert, they're banning romance in another bill that's coming along later, so you might want to.
Well, the chair was wondering if that was your anniversary or something when you started talking about romance and all of that.
No, I was here with you, Representative Carlson, for my wife's birthday, unfortunately, but we did go out, and I thought they were kind of kidding around, and they were very serious. So if you're okay, Representative Huntley, I would move to strike on line 5.6 the words or matches. Be amenable to that, Mr. Chair.
That motion is before us. Representative Huntley has already commented. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to the amendment then, as it applies also to the bill, but Representative Huntley, Representative Seifert raises a good point. Would the smoke from a candlelight dinner be prohibited under your bill?
No.
Mr. Chair and the members of the committee, no, it would not be prohibited.
All right.
Bill later. Any further discussion? Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Huntley or Severson, I think both of you mentioned the Surgeon General's report and how much trust and faith you put in the Surgeon General's report. Either one of you read it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, yes, I have.
I've read the summary, which is like 40 pages.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We haven't adopted the amendment yet, so we should keep the comments relative to the amendment.
Okay, then I'll save my comments to the bill until after.
So any further discussion on the Seifert amendment? Hearing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's Representative Howes.
Herman Howes.
We don't. They keep mailing his political contributions to my office.
Took me a while to get it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Here, I get Holbrooks.
Mr. Chairman and members, I have read the Surgeon General's report, and I'd like to just read one sentence in the preface, and it's part of what the Surgeon General used in his speech. Today, massive and conclusive scientific evidence documents adverse effects of involuntary smoking on children and adults, including cancer and cardiovascular diseases. In order to keep some of our committee a little brief, I'm only going to read about 12 or 15 parts of the Surgeon General's report. The evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of a causal relationship between exposure to secondhand smoke during infancy and childhood cancer. The evidence is inadequate to infer the presence or absence of a causal relationship between prenatal and postnatal exposure to secondhand smoke and other childhood cancer types. The evidence is suggestive but not sufficient to infer a causal relationship between secondhand smoke exposure and a risk of nasal sinus cancer among non-smokers. And I'll make it brief, and I'll just read a couple more, Mr. Chairman, because this is, after all, the Surgeon General's report. The evidence is suggestive, but not sufficient, to infer a causal relationship between short-term secondhand smoke exposure and an acute decline in lung function in persons with asthma. The evidence is suggestive, but not sufficient, to infer a causal relationship between chronic secondhand smoke exposure and a small decrement in lung function in the general population. The evidence is suggestive but not sufficient to infer a causal relationship between secondhand smoke exposure and risk of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Mr. Chairman and members, we keep the people that are moving this bill and keep promoting this bill keep referring to the Surgeon General's report. And if you go through the Surgeon General's report, there is no place in here at all where it says that any facts have been proven, Mr. Chairman and members. The best we can get would be the evidence is sufficient to infer, not prove, not make it a known fact, but just to infer. Well, Mr. Chairman and members, in this business that we do here in the House, we try to bring forward real facts. I know a lot of times when we talk on the House floor, we talk in committee, we refer or infer things that might not necessarily be the facts in the bill. And I know the Speaker always reminds us to get back to the facts of the bill. Well, Mr. Chairman and members, if you read the Surgeon General's report, there are no facts that point to secondhand smoke causing anything. There are no risk levels or facts that have been proven in the science world at all. And that's in the Surgeon General's report, Mr. Chairman.
As I mentioned, we'll take a little discussion and then we'll take the three amendments. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hawes. And if you read through the Surgeon General's report, you find that when they went through the findings, they had different levels of findings. They had inconclusive findings. They had some that had suggestive findings. And then they had those that said beyond a shadow of a doubt. And there were numerous ones in there. And in the executive summary of that report, it says, secondhand smoke causes premature death, disease in children and adults who do not smoke. There are six of those findings. And I'm not going to go over them right now, but the number 4.1 says, scientific evidence indicates there is no risk-free level of exposure to secondhand smoke. Members, this is an issue that has been under scrutiny for the last 20 years. They have done scientific studies, as I initially said, 22 experts in those particular areas. Each of these areas, experts took a report, did the study, and came out with these findings. Now, there were some levels where they said, we cannot conclusively. And those are the ones that Representative Howes is speaking to. However, they did find numerous areas where secondhand smoke was detrimental to the health of the individuals that were involuntarily inhaling the stuff. So, members, when Representative Howes says that this is not conclusive, he's not correct.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think what Representative Howes doesn't understand is the level of proof that you need for a scientific fact to be totally proved. What you'd have to do is what's called a double-blind experiment. So, for example, to look at children's cancer, what you'd have to do is you'd have to, at random, take a group of babies or children, put them in one box and expose them to secondhand smoke, and then another one that you would totally prohibit to without anyone knowing which part of the experiment you were doing. That's when, in a health experiment, when you want to come to conclusive proof for a very specific thing, that's the kind of experiment you need. And everyone has agreed that it would not only be inappropriate, it would be immoral to do the kind of experiments on this subject that you would need to do to say conclusively prove.
Mr. Chair and members, apparently Representative Howes did not hear the testimony from the physician from the Mayo Clinic that talked about secondhand smoke and the fact that in 20 minutes exposure to secondhand smoke, you can have a 30-40% contraction of the arteries in the heart. 20 minutes.
And Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just find my page here. Page 2. I just have a couple of clarifications, and Representative Seifert touched on it a little bit. I guess I'm wondering if you could clarify. I guess I'll start with the other one. On line 2.5, a place of employment includes any indoor area where two or more individuals perform services. So if I'm an employer and I have a home-based business and I smoke and my one employee smokes, would it be then a petty misdemeanor for both me and my employee, who both of us smoke, to do so? So that'd be my first question. And then my second question relates to the significant individual. Can a significant individual be a child? So if I'm a trucker and I want to bring my child in there, because it doesn't specifically say who or who may or may not be a significant individual. And is that designated, or is that if a police officer comes and does he, you know, cuff the significant other at that time? Or how does one know if one is the designated or the significant individual?
Which one of you would
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, the answer to your first question is yes. If this is a place of employment and there's two people working in there, neither one should be smoking. The significant individual one, again, is an attempt to have basically it was two adults, I think, what they were thinking about. But I would agree that that language is probably not adequate at this time to really describe that situation.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, I would encourage you to reevaluate the two or more. I think if two people both smoke in a home office, I think it's just absolutely absurd that they couldn't smoke when they already smoke, so they both have to get up and leave their office. And I would encourage you, too, to clarify the significant individual. I do have one follow-up question.
If I could just point it out. John. Someone pointed out to me that the significant individual in lines 2.25, it says it has to be an adult.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. My additional question would be, would this, I know you also have another bill you're interested in, the medicinal marijuana bill. So would it be the author's intent to also, in a home office, would it also be to prohibit one from smoking medicinal marijuana under this, or just cigarettes in your home office?
That bill, Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, refers to no public place, is what it says. They can't smoke in any public place.
Including the home office.
I don't know the answer to that. You can ask that tonight, because that bill's
I will. So this would be a public place would include a home office, correct?
But if you have any an other employee bill? In there, yeah.
Okay. I will follow up questions later.
I apologize. Thank you. Representative Siefert.
Mr. Chairman, it's somewhat related to Representative Pepin's question, but on bottom of page 4 and top of page 5, I've got a lot of small town bars in my district where they're basically owned and managed by a working couple, husband and wife, if you will. And they have their office in the bar, in the back, with the door closed, where no one else goes except the husband and the wife, who probably spent their life savings to buy this place and try to scratch out a living in a town of 300 people, something very few people in the legislature seem to understand these days. If you read this, it says, asking any person who smokes in an area where smoking is prohibited to refrain from smoking, and if the person does not refrain from smoking after being asked to do so, asking the person to leave. If the person refuses to leave, the proprietor, person, or entity in charge shall handle the situation consistent with lawful methods for handling other persons acting in a disorderly manner or as a trespasser. What happens if they're back in the private office and the wife smokes, the husband is supposed to call the police as if they're trespassing on their own property? Would that be correct?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert. My understanding is that for the public place to be affected by this statute, it would be those that meet in public. I would assume that the office that they're meeting in the back would be their own private place of employment and would not be included under this exemption. And again, members, you know, we always do statute with intent, and the intent here is any place that is a public place where people get together, they have a right to breathe clean air. If there are a couple of individuals that are in an office back there, or if they're in a truck going cross country, unless they get into an argument and one wants to get back at the other, they're not going to call the police on their cell phone and say, hey, this guy's smoking in my cabin, come and pick him up. So there's some amount of reasonableness that we need to apply to statute here. And if there is some verbiage change that would enhance that, certainly let's do that. But picking at individual cases so minute becomes detrimental to this process, and that's not what we're here about.
Mr. Chair, this happens every day in my district. I mean, every night at the Silver Dollar Bar in Ghent, Minnesota, except when they're closed on Mondays and Sundays, this happens. And if the deputy sheriff comes in and sees you pulling the cigarette pack out on your way back to the private office, I mean, we have policemen that pull truckers over every day. I mean, you got the cigarette lit up. We are not, as Representative Kahn points out when she's trying to stop bills or trying to, and obviously she wants this, we are not a legislative intent state. If you put something on the record, it is not admissible in court. We are a journal state, right, Representative Kahn? So if you mean something, you have to put it in the law or it will be used against you in a court of law. It doesn't matter what we say on the tape here today. And so these are real-life scenarios. I don't mean to belittle the authors or anything. I'm just asking because I have people in my district that ask about the matches, that ask about their private offices, that ask about their and the trucks came up, and I'm glad you clarified that's where the significant individual came from. So that one's been, you know, some of these concerns are very legitimate. They aren't meant to belittle the legislation, but everything I've read in the bill when people have raised this is that they would be subjected to breaking the law, and they would be obligated to call. You would be obligated to treat your spouse as a trespasser in your own private office in a private bar. This isn't public property. This is private property. Last I checked, the government doesn't own these bars, do they? Not yet. Maybe the municipals. And I'm a lifelong non-smoker, so I'm okay having non-smoking in where you have to do business, the courthouse, or visiting mom in the nursing home, or the Capitol building, or whatever. I'm not sure if the jail, does the jailhouse, we might have some riots, I think, if this, I'm assuming this includes prisons, too. So, but I'm just wondering, at the end of the day, is private property private or is it public? And I guess the government doesn't own these yet, but there's going to be a lot for sale in my district after this bill passes, because frankly, as close as we are to the South Dakota border, I have a bowling alley owner who said, in a town of 1,500, who said, you might as well put a giveaway sign on the front door of my business, because the only profitability he has is the leagues. People don't casually come in a town that small on a Sunday and bowl, and that's where he makes all his money. He makes his money off the leagues. And the league president said, if you pass a smoking ban in Minnesota, the leagues have decided they are going to go over to Watertown, South Dakota. And they're going to take all their business with them. And I guess it doesn't matter if he fails. Nobody here really cares other than myself and a few other folks. He can go bankrupt. There'll just be one more boarded up business on the main street of one of our small towns. One more nail in the coffin. In the bar down the street, probably it'd have the same thing as people drive to Gary, South Dakota, where Wiesemann Trucking moved after our workers' comp rates and taxes got out of line. So just one by one, we'll just keep plucking away and shove them across the border in the name of whatever nanny state regulation we want to come up with. And that's fine, if that's how the majority feels. But the reality is, members, we are probably going to have some speakeasies around the state. Smokeasy or speakeasies, like the 1920s, where people said, you know what, this isn't working. And I don't know if you want to have smoking-only bars in this legislation to try to get around that. But criminalizing things, and then to have the same author authoring them to legalize marijuana and not, you know, saying it's okay if you're in a home office and smoking your medicinal marijuana cigarettes, but it's not okay to smoke a regular one, it just confuses the public at this point. What are we doing here? So at the end of the day, Mr. Chair, we need to have some answers to these questions. If the wife of the bar owner is a trespasser in the private office or not, from reading everything in here, she is, because it is a workplace environment. And whether the husband has to call the police on his wife or the wife has to call the police on her husband or be treated as a trespasser or conducting disorderly conduct, everything I've read is that that's true. And so when I go back home on the rare opportunities as of late that I've had to go back to my district, These are serious questions that these folks have, and they're not meaning to be malicious or nasty. They just want some innocent questions answered because they're small-town business people trying to struggle out a living in a town of 360 people. They don't have time to come up to the Capitol to lobby this. They're asking me to give their speech for them, and so that's what I just did. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Rukavina. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Severson and Huntley, you said we got to have some amount of reasonableness. Let me tell you, let me just tell you a little story I heard yesterday in my mother's nursing home room with my Auntie Gloria and my mother in there from Melanie, who's a nurse's aide, about reasonableness out there today. And I could go on and tell you the story that I told Representative Cornish about a half an hour ago, but I'll skip that one for a floor session about reasonableness, about destroying somebody's house because they wanted to use the new terrorist equipment they got. But I'll save that one for another time. I'll just tell you Melanie's story. Melanie left her grandmother's house last week, and she was 30 feet from her grandmother's house, and she stopped at a stop sign, and she put her blinker on, and all of a sudden the cop was behind her and put his light on. And he came up to the car, and she said, "What did I do wrong, officer?" He said, "Well, your blinker is not turned." "Well, I know I had my blinker on." So they put she said, "I'll show you." She put the blinker on. The blinker worked one time, then it didn't work. There must have been a short in there. But while he was running her license, he found out that Melanie had three parking tickets that she didn't pay for from 2000. Well, she explained to the police officer she didn't have a license in 2000. How could she have parking tickets when she wasn't driving? She didn't get her license until she was 19 years old. So he said, "Well, that's what it says, and I can't help it. I got to pull your license right now and tow your car." She said, "I'm 30 feet from my grandma. Can I back it up in my grandma's yard?" "Oh, no, you can't do that. I got to go by the book." He pulled the book out of the car. He pulled the book. "Got to go by the book." So the tow place is a block away. She got to pay $100. She probably makes $9 an hour. I don't know if she's in a union up on the range. At least she's in a union. That's reasonableness. That's the reasonableness. I don't know who the buck brigade is going to be to enforce these laws. But Representative Huntley, I go to Zavurro's a lot up in Ely. Actually, Representative Surge goes there once in a while, too. And Zavurro's, that bar's been in the family for three generations. They live upstairs. Both the Zavurro's work there, Ma and Dad, but they got other employees. So can the Zavurro's and the other employees go upstairs and smoke in their house upstairs in the bar, or can they never smoke again?
If it's a public place, they cannot smoke if it's
But one at a time. Representative Huntley, you've got the floor.
The law says you can't smoke in a public place.
Fair members, this is what we're doing to people in the United States of America after we did that to Melanie. And Representative Severson, I won't even begin to tell you the other story I heard today. I'll save that for another time. But do you want to talk about amount of reasonableness? Representative Huntley, where are these fees and fines going to go? Who are they going to go to when the butt brigade starts roaming the streets out there?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, was the experience in Minneapolis and in Duluth and in St. Paul that there's very little cost involved in this enforcement and there are very few penalties.
Mr. Chair, is your bill the same as in Duluth? Does it allow smoking in bars, Representative Huntley?
The law in Duluth currently covers only restaurants.
So, Representative Huntley, Mr. Chair, you have no empirical evidence that the butt brigade ain't going to be out there. Members, I can see it now in Zavurro's up there. The cops block all the entrances, call in for reinforcements, book them, Dano, for smoking in their own house. What's going on here is absolutely unbelievable. And I see Representative Kahn's raising her hand, but Representative Kahn, you talked a little while ago and you lectured Representative Howes about, logic and it would be immoral in that. Applying your logic,
it's okay for somebody that isn't a resident to vote in this country, but an 80-year-old veteran and that fought in World War II, a 70-year-old veteran that fought in Korea, and a 60-year-old veteran that fought in Vietnam can't make their own decision to smoke in their VFW club. So don't talk to me even about logic. Please.
We have three more people to recognize, and then I think we'll go to amendments. As I indicated, we'd allow some discussion on the bill generally, and so the we'll go to amendments after Solberg, Amar, and Kahn. Representative, there you are, Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, I just want Cypher, I just want you to keep in mind when you talk about the majority that there's a minority member and a majority member sitting at the table.
And Representative
Mr. Speaker, to that point, I didn't mean majority of meaning Democrat, Republican. I think I meant a majority of people in the room. I just have a bad feeling that this bill, even though we've, I think, raised some pretty legitimate concerns, I don't think it's a Democrat or Republican issue, no doubt.
Thank Representative Kamer.
Well, just briefly, Mr. Chair, because I know you want to get to the amendments, but I just want to respond to Representative Seifert's comments. And this, especially with this issue, these comments about Big Brother and the nanny state, I mean, give me a break. I mean, you know, government does regulate things. If you have a restaurant or a bar, we hope that government will be there regulating certain things. We want to make sure that food is prepared the right way. We want to make sure that food is refrigerated. We want to make sure that the facility is clean, that there's not vermin and bugs in the restaurant or bar. I damn well want government to regulate these establishments. This is about protecting workers and protecting consumers. It has nothing to do with being a nanny state. And I can tell you, you go around to other states that have done this, it works. It's about protecting consumers. It's about protecting workers. It's not about individual rights.
And Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, just to respond to Representative, I can't remember now, was Rukavina or Cypher, on the enforcement issue. We do have, since 1975, we now have 32 years of the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act and the enforcement of the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act, which at the time exactly all of those issues were raised. And we never had, and one of the things that we discovered was that we never had a vigorous enforcement effort, and it was never necessary. And in 32 years, I think there's been just about none or just a handful of complaints against recalcitrant, mainly against recalcitrant proprietors who weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And I think that not one of them was resolved with anything other than a visit and a conversation with the health department. So we do have 32 years of experience of smoking regulation to look back on.
And Representative Kahn, who was the author of that bill?
I was the author, right? Maybe you were a co-author.
And what committee did it initially go to? Do you remember that? I'm giving her a history test here. We started with history this morning earlier.
Representative Swans from Health and Human Services.
And the subcommittee?
Mr. Chair,
your memory is getting faulty.
I know.
The chair of this committee, yeah. Did spend a little time on that one with you, if you recall. But at any rate, that's aside. The first amendment that we have is A31 by Representative Westrom. Representative Westrom, would you care to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Okay. Representative Westrom moves the amendment, asks for a roll call vote, and if you could explain the amendment.
Members, I've heard this bill be heralded as about health, about not making people be subject to smoking in public places, and this bill is a statewide ban, yet anybody that looks at it real close would realize we've exempted the casinos and haven't even made an attempt to try to get the casinos to also do the healthy thing that the authors are heralding this bill as saving the Minnesota citizens from themselves. And certainly we want to save grandma and grandpa from the smoke at the casinos if they happen to enjoy that once in a while as they venture to a casino and have supper at the buffet or do other things. So this would just require the casinos to also go smoke-free before Minnesota could relicense their gambling license or their liquor license. And I think it's pretty straightforward. If it's going to be a statewide ban, then let's be honest with our terminology.
Representative Huntley.
Well, first of all, I won't do what Representative Lesterman would like it to do, because Indian casinos on tribal land don't need a county or a state permit to serve liquor. They can get it from the tribe themselves. So this bill, while its attempt to pick on the tribes really doesn't, or this amendment rather, while its attempt to affect the tribes, it won't do it. Tribes do have a sovereign status. This bill cannot affect that sovereign status. And I urge you to defeat the amendments.
That point, to that point, Mr. Chairman. We'll get folks in the order that the hands went up. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is a question for Representative Westrom. Would you consider a friendly amendment to change the wording of Indian country to tribal lands?
Representative Pepin, that would be friendly. If it means the same thing, House Research helped draft this, so I assume those words were in there for a reason, but if not, that's fine with me.
Okay, you are incorporating that in
your... I will, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that is incorporated in the amendment. We have Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, just to Representative Huntley's last point about the sovereignty, Representative Huntley, you're certainly correct that in most instances the tribes do enjoy sovereignty, and that's I mean that's well respected. It's established in case law, etc. But Representative Huntley, if this really is about protecting people, we don't know the answer to that question. You may assume that we can't apply this, but we're prohibiting smoking in workplaces under this bill. And a court could interpret this as a prohibitory act. It could. We don't know that. So to say for you to conclude that that this act cannot apply on our tribal lands, I think is Representative Huntley. I think you're getting into an area where none of us belong, which is the judiciary. We leave here when we go to the judiciary. We have a separation of powers, and if we really are talking about protecting Minnesotans, and we're really talking about protecting employees, why wouldn't we protect employees on our tribal lands, and why wouldn't we protect Minnesotans who go to the casinos or other tribal businesses? I think just to assume that the Supreme Court is ultimately going to decide one way or the other, I think that's putting this legislature where it doesn't belong, which is in the judiciary.
Mr. Chair, in a separate committee, we had a report from one of the lawyers that worked for the House of Representatives, and he was quite clear that this was not a prohibition of smoking, and therefore, according to all kinds of court decisions, the bill as written would not apply to anything on tribal lands. Now, personally, I wish they would ban smoking in the casinos, but we cannot pass a law that tells them to do that.
Representative Anderson, before Representative Anderson asks this question, we're not done with the three amendments and the bill. We've reserved, and we did this in advance, room 200 this evening, beginning at 6:30. I want to make sure everybody is aware of that. And I have a feeling that we won't be done by 11:30, because there's already on just this amendment five more people that wanted to comment. So, Representative Huntley, we'll just recess until 6:30 if we're not done. But I just, this is a gentle way of saying we could move it along, however. Representative Huntley. All right.
I was done.
Okay, I thought you wanted you were done. Then Representative Anderson, that's correct. I'd recognized him already.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley, Representative Severson, in Health and Human Services Policy Committee, we talked about, or maybe it was Finance, I'm not sure, I forget which committee we were in, but Representative Erison brought up the fact that in her district, she has tribal-owned casinos that part of the property, part of the building that's on it, is actually being taxed by the county, and it's well attached to the whole establishment there in the casino, because there's been land that's been added on into that, and now it's being taxed by and being a part of under the guise of public public land. And I'm wondering if there's been an answer to that, how we deal with those situations where part of the property is on tribal lands originally, and now it's on added on to lands that's now being taxed by the county.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. There are federal laws, federal statutes that play into this for Indian tribal land, and there are state statutes. And I think there's a large gray area here in terms of what's going to play out and what's going to work and what's not. And I think what we are concerned with is creating a level playing field for the businesses and creating a net across the state that creates a public health issue that says that secondhand smoke is not acceptable in those places of public meeting that we want to eliminate. And I believe there's going to be some areas that are probably going to be litigated through this process. Those areas that you're talking about are probably some of those. But does that mean we don't move forward with this policy? No. That means that we do the best we can as legislators here, let the judicial take their side of the action, and then if we need to, respond to that. But members, I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Rocavino.
I'll pass.
Representative Howells.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Westrom, I would oppose the amendment simply because if the bill is passed the way it is, it's civil and regulatory, and we can't do that. The state doesn't have the authority to impose that on reservations, so I would oppose your amendment for that reason.
Representative Kahn.
Just pointing out, the amendment is fatally flawed because neither the state nor the political subdivision of the state issues or renews any liquor licenses or gambling licenses.
Okay,
it's done by the tribal Indian government.
Very good. And roll call has been requested. Clerk, take the roll. Excuse me, Representative Westrom, I didn't realize you wanted to come in.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn just made a good argument for the amendment. If that's the case, it won't apply. If it doesn't, if you're not correct, though, Representative Kahn, it will apply. And Representative Huntley talked about it being intent on harming the casinos. That isn't the intent, Representative Huntley, but it certainly indicates and argues against your bill. If it's going to hurt the casinos, it's certainly going to hurt the bar owners. I'd urge a yes vote.
Okay, excuse me, clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
No.
Earhart?
No.
Simpson?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yep.
Reiling? Hackbar?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Narrows?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Poles?
Aye.
Manchesky?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
Yeah.
No. Otremba. I didn't hear you, I'm sorry. Yeah? Hamer?
No.
Pelosi? Tepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Rocavino?
No.
Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Surtage?
No.
Severson?
No.
Simon?
No.
Slavik?
No.
Solberg?
Yes.
Swivin?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
The motion fails with 27 noes and 11 ayes. So motion is defeated, and Representative Westrom, you have the second amendment, A30.
Well, Mr. Chair, I will, and I will be brief because I recognize probably the fate of these amendments and this bill. members, if we aren't going to be statewide or inclusive, let's at least have a little respect for the bars in some of our districts that Representative Seifert talked about that have used their savings or probably retirement funds in some cases to buy an establishment and make a living. This would simply came from a county commissioner in my district that was concerned about the smoking ban and et cetera, and some of the small town restaurant bars that we have, and he suggested, you know, if it's going to be passed, how about you look at something that's been done in Arizona that he's familiar with, and he says, let us local units of government on a one-by-one basis decide, give us the ability to do that, and that's simply what this amendment would do. We would implement the statewide smoking, or partially statewide smoking ban, and in some cases, let the local units of government, rather than currently now have to pass a smoking ban, do the reverse. They would have an option on a case-by-case basis to evaluate a situation and license a bar to allow smoking in their facility or a part of their facility. I'd urge a yes vote. Mr. Chair, I ask for roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested, and again, for members, that's the A30 amendment, H, technically the entire number is H0305A30. The motion is before us. Roll call has been requested. Any discussion? Representative Huntley.
Again, Mr. Chair and members, this would not protect the workers that work in this part of that facility, so I urge you to vote against it.
Representative Swingham.
Mr. Chairman, members, and the office, Mr. Mike, this amendment is not a perfect amendment by any way, shape, or form, and I will support it, but it's not the best amendment. You talked about reasonableness.
Representative Brigham, you've been asked by someone that they couldn't hear you, and apparently if you could move the mic a little closer.
Are you sure they want to hear me, Mr. Speaker?
I assume somebody said that they did. Wasn't me, but I do as well.
If someone, whoever it is not heard me speak before, so I understand that. Authors, let's do something reasonable. You both mentioned the word reasonable. Representative Rukavina has done it, Representative Seifert. Let's go ahead and let's ban it in the bar, let's ban smoking in restaurants where the kids and the parents go and they frequent. And let's let the bars and the VFWs and the Legions and those folks alone and let them make choices in their life. Now, this amendment would make a step in that direction in a reasonable way. You know, be reasonable. Cooperate. Compromise. Yeah. Don't be the extreme radicals that this bill seems to be. Pass this amendment. Let's move in the right direction.
Representative Severson, briefly, we're going to try to get, if possible, that second or third amendment up, and then we wouldn't have to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swingham, and I appreciate that that perspective, but this is not reasonable, because what we're doing is we're telling small businesses that they're going to have to invest upwards of $60,000 for a ventilation system that many of them don't have the money to do that to stay competitive. Not only that, but the Surgeon General's report says separating smokers from non-smokers, cleaning the air, and ventilating buildings cannot eliminate exposure of non-smokers to secondhand smoke. Ventilation systems don't work. And what we're really talking about here is the health of not just the people that are attending these establishments, we're talking about the health of the employers. Members, vote this amendment down.
Both. Okay, clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
No.
Earhart?
No.
Simpson?
Yes.
Groffalo?
Yes.
Starling? Chatbarth?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Wilkie?
No.
Howes?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Yaros?
Yes.
Dunkey?
Yes.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Minchesky?
No.
Leader?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otumba?
Yes.
Pimar?
No.
Kowalski? Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Saylor?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
Yes.
Severson?
No.
Simon?
No.
Slavik?
No.
Solberg?
Yes.
Swigum?
Yep.
Peason?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Barker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Neva, Neva. Neva.
Ricketts Venus changes from no to I.
The motion fails with 20 no and 18 yes. Representative Rukavina.
Chairman,
members, if this can go very quickly, we'll run over it just ever so briefly for the Rukavina amendment, then we can take up the final vote, and we won't have to act tonight. So, Representative
Mr. Chairman, over here.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, I fight in vain to get your attention because I did want to amend the Westrom Amendment, and if I would have been allowed to do that, both of the authors up there spoke to that, and it felt like it might have went on. So just in the future. And I don't know what the
procedure is. I didn't see you. It's,
I don't know what the procedure is, parliamentary procedure in this committee is, but is it the same as if it's on the floor and I voted on the prevailing side, I could bring this amendment back up?
We'd have a couple of options. You could move to reconsider it, or you could just reauthor the amendment with the changes that he wanted to incorporate it, and that way it would be a new amendment.
Mr. Chairman, would I be allowed to do that right now? It's a very short verbal amendment.
I had recognized Representative Rukavina if he wants to. Had you made your motion yet, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to do mine first, and then if we could come back and do Representative Halls if they're going to, because mine shouldn't take long.
Okay.
I'd like to do mine first.
Then we'll. Vina, I'd already recognized Representative Rukavina will take his amendment. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you know, this bill talks about protecting employees, and that's what I want to do with this amendment because, you know, you can talk about people not getting laid off at all, but I got to believe my eyes and not Representative Huntley and Severson's facts because, you know, I've been going to Mancini since they came down here, and up until the smoking ban went into effect, it was packed every night that we were there. And now you can shoot a cannon off in the bar on any night, and you won't hit anybody. We drive my McGovern's, which used to be packed that night. There's nobody in it anymore. There's bars all over St. Paul that have closed. And I am worried because the dislocated worker program, we're not sure if these people would qualify. And if they do, which is an if there'd be enough money to fund this. So I'd like to put this on, take it to my committee to put some wording to assure that the people that are going to lose their jobs, and I can tell you people that have already in St. Paul at least, that they're going to be able to qualify for new training. And I am not going to kill this bill, Representative Huntley. I just want to make sure that if you really care about employees, which no one, I don't think, at this table can say anybody got a bigger heart for working poorer than me, and that's what waitresses and waiters are. I'd like to put this on and take care of it and then send it out to the floor. I think it should go to taxes, but I guess I'm not the one making up fiscal notes, so I'll send it out to the floor.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rokovina, and it was in your committee that we asked this question of Deed, if in fact they do qualify for unemployment insurance, and that was after they had received over $1,250 in benefits, they do in fact qualify for this program. So this is already in place, Mr. Chair and members. I don't think we need to go any further with it.
Chair.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, in every state that this has been passed, there has been a short-term decline in revenues from bars and restaurants, but that usually recovers after about 6 months, and the net has always been no decline in employees, in tax revenues, any other way you want to look at it. May a particular bar be hurt? Yes, that is true. But overall, there's no decline in the number of people employed, and when we passed it in Duluth, again, tax receipts actually went up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, first of all, Representative Searson, you're referring to unemployment insurance. Number two, Representative Huntley, this bill is totally different than what the people in your community undid. The people in your community undid your bill, voted against it, and reinstated smoking in bars. Huge vote. Even on the Cake Eater East End where you represent, it was 50-50. But on the real working people's end that Representative Yaddo's represents, it was overwhelming to let them smoke in bars. Now, I'm not even going to bring up the argument about who the hell goes to a bar to get healthy, because I don't. But aside from that, what you're talking about is total nonsense, Representative Huntley, because it doesn't apply to Duluth. So, you know, I'll tell you what, Representative Huntley, when I have this, I hope I win this. And when I do, I'm going to bring those fictional people into my committee, and you tell them they're a figment of my imagination and yours, that they don't exist, that they really didn't get laid off. You tell them that, Representative Huntley. Members, if you care about it, Representative Simon, you're an Iron Ranger at heart. Your great-grandparents came to the range. Representative Solberg, I know you're going to vote for this. Representative Yaddo's, you're kind of hiding over there because I don't think you know what to do, but... Kadia pushing me a briga, okay? Resumish? So, members, Representative Clark, I know you care about working people. I'd appreciate a vote on this, and we'll straighten this thing out.
Okay, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I two questions. I didn't understand Representative Severson's description of people already being qualified. You said if they receive over $1,250. I'm not sure what you're referring to. Can you enlighten me about what you're talking about?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, and that was for unemployment insurance.
Oh, okay. So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark,
this particular amendment, you know, I think it needs a little bit of fixing. But I think that the workers already should be qualified, and if it gives them comfort to make sure that they are qualified, I'd like to suggest an amendment.
Sounds like
that would strike the words after must up until the word 1.5 the dislocated worker. So it would be strike allocate sufficient funds in the biennium ending June 30, 2009 and substitute the word enable.
Okay, that amendment is before us.
Not Mr. Chair.
Do you want to incorporate that?
Okay, I'll incorporate it, Mr. Chair, but we still got to make sure that they're going to, that there's going to be sufficient funding in that there. And I want to bring these, this is an economic development issue along with an employment issue, which both should have jurisdiction in my committee. So, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate a vote on my amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? And her suggestion was incorporated. Okay, we've got several people. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think this particular amendment is hugely problematic. We have many issues that are dealing with how a business fails or succeeds. This is a small portion of that. There are many businesses that may be on the edge, and this may be just enough to break them. Or it may be that they're on their way through that, and they come back and say, you know, it was because of the smoking ban that I lost my business. So when we get into the legal battle of this thing, it is going to be a Trojan horse. And members, I would tell you that those businesses that are able to succeed will succeed with the smoking ban, and those that are not able to succeed are going to fail anyways. And this is just an unmeasurable indicator.
Okay, Representative Cornish.
Oh, I just wanted to say, Representative Severson, I told you I was going to stick with the amendment. I just wanted to apologize to you and one lobbyist, I promise that too. This is the one that I'm going to vote for. I didn't have any problem with applying to all the workplaces and carte blanche, this and that. But this one here, I'm going to vote for.
Okay, final word, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not about businesses, Representative Stevenson, it's about employee people. Appreciate your support, members.
Representative Rukavina, I'm sorry I was interrupted.
I'm done.
Oh, okay.
Well,
The Rukavina Amendment 180 is before us as amended, or I guess it was incorporated, so it's not as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, if you could raise your hand.
Earhart, come on.
Yeah, it's rather obvious. It's 22 in favor, so motion carried. We now have the bill before us.
Mr. Chair, I would move to re-refer the bill to higher education and workforce development. So.
That's not an appropriate motion.
Mr. Chair, it's a higher motion.
No, but the he would have to refer it to the motion. The appropriate motion would be to Mary Murphy's committee, the Education Finance Committee. And then she would refer it, if that motion carried, to your division.
That would be my motion.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we still have amendments. I wanted to pick up on the Western Amendment.
Right. Okay.
If that's a higher motion, then fine, as long as we don't close the bill up, Mr. Chairman.
You're correct. But we do have now a higher motion to re-refer it.
I would temporarily withdraw my motion.
Okay.
The assumption I'm going to make it.
House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to pick up on Westrum's amendment, the A30 amendment. And on line 23, and I may need help with staff, after minors, insert or entrance of employees. May have to ask staff to make sure that's worded correctly. And then I'd like to comment on the amendment.
You got it? Okay, Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This would allow then a separate room that only people that chose to go in there would go in there. No minors can go in there. No employees can go in there. It would be for the public, obviously, but the public would choose to go in there or not. Obviously, someone who didn't smoke wouldn't go in there. There's no food or beverage in there. And Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons I did this also are the comments that Representative Severson made about we can't force businesses to put in $60,000 worth of ventilation. I have several restaurants in my district that have already spent $40,000 in ventilation, and if we're here to protect the businesses and the amount of money that they spend, then I would imagine Representative Severson would be in favor of those that have already spent the money. And Representative Huntley commented on this is to protect the employees, so obviously by not letting the employees in there, we are protecting the employees. So, Mr. Chairman, I think I have a great amendment, and I'd like a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Huntley, Severson, either of you?
I don't think there's any ventilation systems that can totally keep the smoke from going back and forth, so I would be strongly opposed to this amendment.
Representative Westrum,
it's fine with me, Mr. Chair.
It's now a different amendment, but
it is.
You're now endorsing.
It's more restrictive, but I support this. I think it's a reasonable compromise.
Okay, Representative Tunkey.
Well, and again, I support Representative Howe. As members, this is just a smoking room. You have some of these in Minneapolis where they've already banned it. No employees, only people that choose to go in there. This is just a smoking room. Separate room, walls, floor to ceiling, ventilation out. Does not intermix with the other bar, with the other rooms. Members, I've talked to a lot of supporters of this bill in both the Senate and the House. They have no problem with this. If it's really about employees and other non-smokers, then this addresses it. and again, I will repeat, I've talked to a lot of supporters of this bill, people who are on the bill, who support this. This is just a smoking room. It has nothing to do with any employees or any open areas where the public goes into. It's a separated room. So this makes absolute sense.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
Representative Mahoney was next. He's got his hand up for a moment. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And with this particular amendment on it, I think I'm going to have to support this also. I keep hearing people say that because some engineer came here and told us that ventilation won't work, members asked me, American Society of Mechanical Engineers did their test based on a reason, not including part of some of the particulates. So I know that ventilation can do this. My real comment to this is I was going to ask the author of the amendment. I remember walking through an airport, and I came across a room that was all of a sudden all glass, but it was gray behind the glass. Is that kind of the principle of this, where that was the smoking room, and that's where all the smokers went, and I didn't have to suffer through it in the hallways? Or, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Representative House, did you want to ask you a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's similar to what he saw, but I have been in one of those rooms, and they do not have, they just have natural ventilation. They do not have mechanical ventilation. And with respect to Representative Huntley's comment about we don't know that there's anything available to properly ventilate, I will tell you that the Northern Lights Casino in my district allows smoking in the casino. In the hotel and meeting areas, they do not allow smoking, nor do they allow smoking in their restaurant. But you can walk from the non-smoking area, walk all the way through the casino. You may smell cigarette smoke if you're standing next to someone that's smoking. But the ventilation system they have in there, bar none, is the greatest ventilation system I've ever seen in any building. You cannot see the haze of smoke. You do not smell the smoke unless you're standing next to a cigarette smoker. And it's a great system, and I think let's let the entrepreneurs of the world invent that ventilative system that's going to work, and this would allow them to do that.
Okay, now Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Let's pick some winners and losers here. Let's say all the people that have all the big bucks to pour into a huge ventilation system that's going to try and extract this, which it's not able to do, which we've already talked about from the Surgeon General's report. Let's say that they get the edge on the business sector here by investing these huge amounts of money, and those that can't, those small businesses that are hanging by the wire, let's just say you invest $60,000 into this ventilation system, and oh, by the way, if you're able to make it, then you're okay. But we're going to put this big monkey on your back, and if you go down, that's too bad. We've got an unemployment insurance program for you. Members, this is about a level playing field. If we don't require the businesses to have a ventilation system, we create a level playing field.
Representative Hamer?
No, Pat.
Okay, Clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Chair? Just procedurally, I wonder if we need to vote on the Representative Howe's motion to reconsider, and then we...
No.
We have Representative Westrum. We had two options, and the one that I suggested was a new amendment with the new language, and that's what's before us. So everybody clear on it? This is a new amendment.
We're clear.
Okay, Clerk will take the roll.
Carlson.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Clark. Cornish.
No.
Earhart.
No.
Sinstead.
Yes.
Groffel.
Yes.
Freiling. Hackbarth.
Yes.
Hausman.
No.
Hussey.
No.
Haus.
Yes.
Huntley.
No.
Yaros.
Yeah.
Junkie.
Yes.
Kahn.
No.
Coles.
Aye.
Lanchesky. Leader?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Yes.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otsimba?
Yes.
Tamar?
No.
Kowalski? Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Sailor?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
Yes.
Severson?
No.
Simon?
No.
Slavik?
No.
Goldberg.
Yes.
Wiggum.
Yes.
Thiessen.
No.
Lagunas.
No.
Walker.
No.
Westrom.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to vote no. Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. A motion carried by a vote of 20 to 18.
Sure, I'd renew my motion now.
The Rukavina motion is before us, and you want to restate your motion?
We refer it to Representative Murphy's Committee on Education and Workforce. What is it called, Mary?
Education and Workforce
Development.
The motion is before us, Representative Kamer.
Members, I would urge a no vote. I have total confidence and respect for Representative Murphy. I don't even know what her position is on this issue, but I know if it gets to Representative Rukavina's committee, this will be dead as the 20,000 cancer victims in this state.
Mr. Chair, is Representative Paymar calling me a liar?
Representative...
Representative Paymar, you calling me a liar here?
Let's keep some control here.
Representative Paymar, Mr. Chair?
Esky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, on the re-referral motion. And I apologize, members. I'm running in and out because we are releasing our property tax relief proposal at this exact same time. So I do want to ask that before I vote on the re-referral motion, my understanding before this bill ever came here, and because I have been back and forth between the property tax committee, there had been a tax provision. Was that removed? Because
yes.
It's not. It was. So it no longer needs to go to taxes?
The bill, as it came before us, no longer had a... fiscal impact. The Rukavina amendment, I'm not yet with the Clark amendment doesn't raise the cost of the bill. It just what was the wording that was used there?
Enable.
It was enable. Board must enable, if there's no increase in the appropriation here. Now, there are two ways that this could be handled, and I'm going to use the library bill as an example. That's a policy bill that's before the committee that will be moved out, and in that case, the appropriation is being carried separately. So in terms of the information to the committee, if there is a cost, and Representative Rukavina wanted to address that cost in his division with his omnibus bill, that would be an option. But it is arguable with that amendment that at this point there's not a cost. It's just increasing the eligibility of a program that's already there, as I understand it, or enable them to participate. So the Rukavina motion is before us, however, for re-referral, and that's a higher motion. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina. Representative Lanchesky, you have the floor.
I just wanted to close up the tax piece. And again, I apologize. I wasn't referencing the Clark Amendment. I was referencing the 2.5% sales tax on liquor. Did that get taken out of the bill?
That's what I said. It's out.
Okay.
It's a revenue neutral when it came into the committee, and I was saying the only one that raises a question would be the Rukavina amendment, and I assume that's why he's made the motion. My point is it's debatable whether there is actually a cost or not in checking with Mr. Marks. How did you say it, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, I think I said it's intent language. It doesn't change any sort of appropriation. The issue of does it make more people eligible or not is one we really don't know.
So it's up to the committee. If you want to re-refer it, that's the motion that's before us. If you don't, then the Huntley motion is before us to send it to the general registry. So Representative Rukavina, you're concluding. Oh, we got one other junkie. Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, first of all, Representative Paymar,
I apologize if I got a little hot at you, but, you know, it seems to me like you're calling me a liar where I come from, because I gave my word at the beginning of the amendment that I would not kill this bill and I'd vote it out of my committee and I'll even vote for it. So I don't know why. I thought you and I were pretty good buddies, why you'd call me a liar at this table, Representative Tamar. But, Mr. Chair, I've been around here 21 years, not as long as you and Representative Vaughn and Representative Solberg and Representative Murphy and Representative Clark.
You are down Swigum. Just a bit.
And Swigum.
Way down.
I said Carlson and Conn. But I think next to them, I'm the top, and me and Gene are tied, but I got seniority because I won the draw for our class. So I've never seen a bill not get referred to a finance chair that had a reason to see it. And I'm also the policy chair, and I want to make sure the policy covers these people, and we don't know what the cost is going to be to the fund. And the fund has been, Mr. Chair, members, has been depleted. I mean, it's had a lot of new programs put in it. Representative Clark, you know that. There's been tons of workforce development money taken out. In fact, you're taking a ton more out this year, Representative Clark. So that's what I want to see the bill for, and I appreciate the yes vote. And Representative Tamar, you know me, and I keep my word. And I don't think you can find a person in this room or a lobbyist or a member from the public that will tell you otherwise.
Sure. Hey, we have Representative Junkie next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to amplify what Representative Riccavina said, members, there's a lot of chairs sitting here and former chairs on this committee. And if we're going to get to the point where a chair can't request a bill, even when they've said they're going to hear it and hopefully move it, then that's very dangerous. And it's already happened once this year to someone who's sitting at this table by someone else who's sitting at this table. And I don't think that's proper. I think if someone wants to see a bill, they ought to see a bill as a chair. And members, if we're going to start messing with a chairman's request to take a look at a bill down in their committee, I think we've got a lot of problems. And I would hope we'd respect that process, members, and let Representative Riccavina see this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I also sit on Representative Rukavina's committee, and I also think that now that this is going to be dealing with workforce issues, which should go to his committee, I can't say it strongly enough how much I agree with Representative Junkie. I think if a committee chairman or woman chooses to see a bill and is given proper notice and it's denied, then we have a serious, serious problem. So I will be voting for this, and to Representative Tamar, I actually want to see this ban go through and be done with it. I don't want to see it come here again unless there's some draconian issue that I'm not aware of. I'm not trying to kill this particular bill in Riccavina's committee.
Mr. Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Riccavina, I voted for your amendment because I thought it was a good amendment. I still do. I think it is important for us to always be mindful of our working men and women, and whatever we can do to make sure we're covering them, we cover them. But this bill didn't come into this committee with this provision on there. And I'm a committee chair, and I obviously, you know, share Representative Junkie's and Representative Mahoney's perspective on the chair's prerogative to request bills. But this language wasn't here until we put it on here a few minutes ago. And I think the Representative Clark's language here, for me, convinces me that we're okay with this. In terms of getting it straight to the floor. I generally like things getting to the floor as soon as possible. So, Representative Riccavina, I supported you on the amendment. I think it's the right thing to do. But frankly, I'd like to just have a straight up vote on the floor on this bill at this point.
Well, I just support Representative. When you look at the possible appropriations effect, I just agree with Mr. Marks. There's hardly any. The bill doesn't take effect until until January 1st, 2009, anyway, and so there's no, and if Representative Riccavina thinks he has to put more money into that, his bill is still before him and he can. this bill does not have to be held up for him. There's nothing he needs to see in his committee with this bill for him to decide to put more money into the dislocated workers program.
Yeah, concluding comment by either of the authors? Okay, if hearing none, then no further discussion. All those in favor of the Rukavina referral amendment to the Education and Workforce Development Committee signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
We'll have a show of hands. All those in favor? All those opposed? The motion prevails 19 to 12. With that, meeting adjourned.